Welcome to the Crystal Pain Show, where we help you embrace your life right where you are and give you practical steps to get where you want to go. Whether you are in your car, folding laundry, cooking, cleaning, or maybe even just enjoying a cup of coffee and a few minutes of quiet, we're so glad you're joining us today. Here's your host, wife, mom of six kids, foster mom, entrepreneur, and author, Crystal Pain.
Welcome to the Crystal Pain Show, y'all. This episode is one that I selfishly just want to do for myself. So y'all can listen in, but I have a lot of questions that I want to ask our guest for me. And I am just so excited to glean and learn. Lindsay Maestas, she has a brand new book, Don't Burn Your Own House Down. Y'all, prioritizing your marriage, your spouse, and yourself for a deeper connection. Lindsay and I actually met at a Dave Ramsey event. I don't know if it was four-ish years ago. And I remember just instantly feeling so connected with her, and just, I have learned so much from her. But I remember we went out to coffee pretty soon thereafter, and we're sitting in this coffee shop, and I will never forget her just really challenging me in my marriage and asking me some questions. And one of those was, when my husband, his name is Jesse, Lindsay's husband is also named Jesse, so there might be some confusion in this episode, but we both have husbands named Jesse. When he walks in the door, wherever he's been, do I stop what I'm doing and greet him? Do I act excited to see him? And I realized, no. Like, the only reason I would feel excited to see him would be like, oh, good, now you can come help take over or help me out with the kids or help with this project. And I wasn't seeing him as a person. I was seeing him as someone to just help me out. And that convicted me so much. So Lindsay, I need all of the wisdom that you are going to share today. And I've talked about this some online. My husband and I have talked about it some on podcasts that we've done. But the last 5 years of our life, with just bringing home 4 babies in 2.5 years and having 3 teenagers, it's been a lot. And I think our marriage is the thing that gets thrown to the back burner.
Yeah. Well, I want to encourage you though, because I think, first of all, when Crystal, thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Thankful. It's so excited to be here. But you have encouraged me in this book process. You have encouraged me in your motherhood, in the way that you live, in the amount of responsibility that you take on for the sake of others and the love of others. And I am very, very honored to just have you as a friend. So thank you. But also, you've got a lot on your plate, and it is not easy. I think I have 2 boys, 7 and 10, and I find it really difficult to put my marriage first. And it's something that takes intentionality every single day. And I think a lot of the time we believe that love and commitment and joy and friendship just like happen to us. But they don't. As much as it would be great if we got married and then it just continued on, we would be, you know, it would just magically come into our hearts and be that. But it's not. It's a choice. And one thing I've said to my husband a lot is we have to choose to like each other, even in the moments when we don't feel like we love each other, because there will be those seasons. And for the listeners, if your neighbors, your friends, your family don't tell you, marriage is hard. They are struggling too. The picket fence and the pretty Christmas photos, when you really dig into people, when you dig into their lives and what they have going on behind the picket fence, is disconnection and struggle and working to understand one another and finding ways to connect and communicate and date and find romance after 10, 15, like you, Crystal, 23 years of marriage. That's a long time to be with one person and to try to always make it work. So you, even if you feel like you're alone, I just want to encourage that. I talk to hundreds of people a month, women, a lot of them, because they're more willing to communicate, but women who are struggling and they feel like maybe they married the wrong person, or they feel like they don't know if this is where they belong anymore, or they've grown apart from their spouse, or they're so tired of feeling like roommates or begging for connection and their spouse just never hearing them. So my heart with Don't Burn Your Own House Down and this episode is just to give you a little bit of hope and some tools and tips that will bring you back to the place where you said, I do, and you were excited and you had a friendship and you had playfulness and love, and you're choosing that. It may not come easily, but we've made a commitment. We have a covenant under God to stick with one another through sickness and health and all of the trials. So our culture says, just get divorced. It's easier. Just, you know, walk away, find somebody new. What they don't fully communicate is how many more problems you're going to have with somebody new because you have baggage and experience with another person. Say you have children. And a lot of the time, I think we almost romanticize divorce in our culture to where we think, oh, it's just, oh, it's freedom. And I get it. Sometimes my husband and I have moments where it's like, man, it just feels like it would be easier to be alone or to meet someone else who's more like me or more compatible to me. And yet when I walk through divorce with people in my life, you see there's a reason that God has called you to stick with it, to covenant, because it dissolves and destroys everything you've brought together. Mm-hmm. And I do want to be clear that divorce is not the ultimate sin, right? There are reasons for divorce, abuse, adultery. There are moments where it feels like there's no option. And I'm not trying to shame anyone who has walked through that because they already have felt the weight of what it does to their life. They've already felt the pain. And I never want to add to that. But I will say, if you've not walked through it, there is hope for your relationship that divorce does not have to be the option.
Mm. I was just thinking as you were talking how I feel like social media almost has tried to paint this new light on divorce. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen this, but it's becoming very common that there will be this like beautiful professional picture taken of this family. And then in the comments, I mean, in the caption, it'll say something like, we have just decided after, you know, 17 years that we have had a wonderful season of marriage and now it is time for us to move on and be just best friends. And it's like this glorification of divorce as this beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've seen it so much. Crystal, I feel like that was one of the things that prompted this book. Mm-hmm. I remember when I lived back in New Mexico before we moved here to Nashville, I was watching these reels and I was scrolling through and these people would be saying, oh, my husband didn't fill my stocking, or my husband didn't do anything for Valentine's Day, or my kitchen was a mess when I left, which yes, all of those things are frustrating, right? They feel like I feel unseen, I feel unvalued, or undervalued, and they're not seeing me. And that can feel really lonely. It is really lonely. So I don't diminish that. But the answer does not have to be the ultimatum. It's kind of like trying to think of an analogy, but like, okay, I can't eat that piece of broccoli on my plate, so therefore I won't eat anything else for the rest of my life. Like, I think that it's a small issue that comes from a deeper root, like a core issue of your spouse. So say the stocking, right? Or the Valentine's Day gift. It's not the gift itself. We know that. It's the fact that we feel like our spouse doesn't care about us. They don't care to put in effort for romance. They don't care to do the dishes when they know it would take something off of our plate. They're not caring about our needs. And really, the most basic form of consideration and love is to think of what the other person needs in order to have an easier life or a more joyful life. And we do that for our neighbors. We do it for strangers. We do it for friends. But when it comes to our spouse, we're less willing to do those things. And I think when you're within the four walls of your own home, you want your partner to consider you just as they would consider their best friend, or talk to you in the way that they talk to their best friend. But with that said, that doesn't mean that you take that one thing, that core issue, which is a core issue, and you then say, I throw out baby in the bathwater, right? Is that the saying? Baby with the bathwater. I don't know if I've ever used that before, but you don't have to get rid of it, but you do have to do the work to shift it. And what I tell everybody is you can only change yourself. Think about how hard it is to change yourself, to change your eating habits, to change your workout habits, to change the way that you interact with people, to change how you forgive or how easily you forgive. And then try to think about trying to change somebody else. when they're not in your mind, they're not in your body. It is really impossible. And we're not meant to be the person who fixes. We're not meant to be the Holy Spirit in our spouse's life. We are meant to love them well and to have a place where they can come safely to communicate their needs, their wants. Both partners, the husband and the wife, should be in a place where they, if I come to you and I have a grievance, it shouldn't turn into, oh, I guess I'm just a piece of crap. You know, I'm just this horrible partner who can't do anything right. It's like, no, I have a need. And so both have to learn to communicate. And that's the heart of Don't Burn Your Own House Down, is teaching you how to communicate in a way that is not pointing fingers, but is more so looking at your covenant, looking at Jesus, and trusting your spouse to the Holy Spirit and saying, okay, if I can't change my partner and I don't want a divorce, I don't want to throw my family away, I don't want to rip my family apart, how then can I step back and say, I desire to change the way that I live, because that's the only thing that we can control.
So let's go to that woman who has had that experience. I mean, just being fully transparent, I've had that experience where it was Christmas, a recent Christmas, and I was disappointed. And I didn't even realize I had expectations. Like, I don't usually, I'm not the kind that has all these expectations, but I think it was just that it felt like the gifts weren't personal.
Yeah.
You know, like it felt like it wasn't something that there was a lot of time and thought put into. What do you do in that situation? If you can only change you, how should I have responded? Because I felt hurt.
Yeah. I think that there are a few things. One is always communication. I have talked to so many people who feel like their spouse should just know, that they should read their minds. And I will get to the point where you have communicated and they don't listen, because I know that happens also. But there are a lot of people who think, oh my gosh, if only my spouse could read my mind, if only my spouse knew what I wanted. And it comes down to where, when I say, hey, here are some ways to communicate the needs that you have. Here are some ways to communicate the desires that you have. For example, birthdays are a big deal to me. My mom always made it a big deal. She would wake up in the morning and bring me a pancake or a waffle with a candle on it. And that was like how we started the day. And then the whole day was just filled with stuff. My husband did not celebrate birthdays. They didn't do it at all. So I think number one is coming to a place where you realize there are different, you are raised differently. You have different expectations. You have different DNA. You have different family dynamics that all play into the relationship. And that builds upon itself and into who this person is and what they prioritize, what they care about. So while birthdays were very important to me, they weren't important to my husband. And so every birthday, like you're saying for Christmas, I didn't communicate necessarily what I wanted. I just hoped that he would care enough and know it was important to me, because I had communicated that, to do something. I eventually had to say, hey, my stocking, my birthday, these things are all very important to me. And I need you to understand why. Like, this is what my life looked like growing up. These are the things it makes me feel when you don't do these things, when you don't personalize a gift. This is what it makes me feel. Now, the very tough part is when you do that and then your spouse doesn't hear you at all, or they just repeat the same pattern. What I've come to in my heart, because I can relate, Crystal, where I have felt like, gosh, are we just not, and that was a lot that also that prompted the book, was like, Lord, I need some clarity here, because I don't want to spend the rest of my life like trying to tell someone how to love me when it seems like I'm not asking for a lot. And my husband feels like every time I ask him for something, I'm telling him he's not good enough. This is a very, very common dynamic. And so I just want to communicate this, that a lot of the time when you're asking for something, especially if you kind of have more of a pursuer personality type, an anxious attachment style is what it's called, and you're married to someone who's more of an avoidant, where they don't want to deal with the issues, they don't want to communicate the issues, they're more likely to pull away when you request something. And that's not because they don't want to love you well. It's not because they don't care about you. It's not even because they don't consider you. It's because what they hear when they bought you a gift and it's not the gift you felt was personal, or say they didn't buy you a gift and they thought, well, you said you didn't want anything, you know, when you finally say, hey, this just feels like you're not considering me, they immediately feel like a failure. And most men will not communicate that they feel like a failure. They're not going to say, some will. Some will say, I guess I'm just garbage. I guess I'm just a horrible husband. I'll never get it right. I'll never be enough for you. I've heard that from my husband. He's communicated that like publicly, so I can say that. I just feel like I'm never going to be enough to make you happy. And to me, I'm like, gosh, I'm asking for so little. But until I realized the crazy cycle, which is what I call it, where you have a person who's a communicator and a person who is more avoidant, the more I communicate and ask, the more they feel incompatible or they shut down because they feel like they can never meet the goal. And then the more they withdraw, the more I feel alone. And then you go in this infinity loop where I would encourage listeners, you know, write it out, write down the things that your core values inside of the infinity loop, like your core needs within the relationship. And then write down how you typically ask for those things and what they make you feel. And then talk with your spouse. Because a lot of the time we go in this cycle and we don't realize that our asks seem so simple to us, but they actually are feeling something else about the ask. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm making sense in my head. But I feel that what we see in avoidant, anxious relationships. And I say this so certainly because this is a very, very probably 85 to 90% of relationships have one or the other. And it is all based on childhood dynamics. But if somebody's not willing to face their own emotions, how can we think that they will face our emotions? Mm. So I have had to really navigate this within the past few years. It's been a tough season. And I feel like the enemy really will do anything to disconnect. And I believe that sometimes therapy can make things harder. Mm-hmm. And so that's why within Don't Burn Your Own House Down, I'm not trying to get you to rehash your issues again and again, because that's what therapy does. And I'm a huge advocate of counseling, so please hear me when I say that. But I think dependent on the relationship style, sometimes it's like you're stirring the pot and you're like adding a little bit of mud into the clear water and you keep stirring and stirring and it just gets more and more and more muddy because you are rehashing the issues. And one, I have an entire chapter on becoming best friends again. And I think that that's a lot of the time what we're missing. We need friendship. We need relationship. We need playfulness and laughter. Have you ever seen The Notebook? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that movie. I know that there's a lot of like sketchy dynamics within it, but there's one part where she's talking to her parents and Allie, and she says, you don't know anything about love. You don't laugh. You don't touch. You don't play. You don't know love, kind of like I know love, I'm paraphrasing, but, and her parents, obviously they have had many, many years together. And so there's this depth of relationship there that Allie doesn't understand. But what they also don't understand is she's right. There is a playfulness and a joy and a fun needed. And sometimes my husband will say that, and I just want to encourage our listeners today that sometimes you can only talk face to face for so long until you're both worn and weary and exhausted, or you're like pleading for something when you simply need to just be the thing. Mm-hmm. And again, I know we're all tired of going first. That's a woman's response almost always, like, but I always go first. And I understand, but I think that Jesus made us capable of having such emotional depth that it's a gift. And our husbands, a lot of the time, and this is not always the case. Sometimes the woman is the one with less emotional depth, but most of the time, a woman's emotional depth is so weighty sometimes, but it's so beautiful. And it's like you feel, and you hate it because you're like, oh, I would kill to just not care. But that's a gift from the Lord. And so I would almost try to shift perspective to see it as a blessing. I carry this emotional depth. I see it and I see what I want for my life. And my husband may not even be able to communicate it. So how can I continue going first without resentment to say, God's given me the ability to see a need for friendship. So let's do something side by side. And I talk about this in the book pretty intently because I believe doing hobbies with one another, trying to just be playful and funny, doing random karaoke nights with one another, or having dance parties in your home, or watching funny videos together before bed. Like, there's these little things you can implement that have really helped us to step back from the hard conversations in hard seasons. There is a time for it, and you have to make sure the timing and the tone is good. But there's also just a place for, gosh, I just want to breathe and have fun with you again. So how can we do that?
Mm. That's so good.
Amoir makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Amoir, build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for new to you styles. I have loved Amoir, and I have to tell you, one of the favorite things of Amoir for me has been that it can help you to define your personal style. I'm not someone who automatically just knows, oh, this and this and this goes together and will look great on my body type. I love how they pick items for you based upon your style, based upon your size. And then you get to look on there and be like, which one of these do I think I'd like to try out? You're not buying it, you're trying it. And so I've tried out a lot of different styles that I usually wouldn't because I'm just renting it. And here is the interesting thing. I have discovered some styles that I never would have, that I've fallen in love with. In fact, I have a pair of overalls and a pair of jeans that I have gotten from Amoir that became part of my wardrobe that I kept because I loved them so, so much. And to this day, I wear that pair of jeans multiple times a week, and I wear that pair of overalls. If you follow me on Instagram, you know the pair of overalls I'm talking about, but probably once or twice every single week. And so this helps you to be able to try some new things without spending the money on them that you typically would, because they're such high quality products. And if you don't like it, if it doesn't work for your body type, if it doesn't work for your style, you can send it right back. Right now, my listeners can give Amoir a try and get up to 60% off their first month. That's up to $150 off. Just visit amoir.style/crystal. That is amoir.style, amoir.style/crystal, to get up to 60% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Amoir today.
There's a woman in my life who's really struggling in her marriage. And just, I think it was last week, I was talking with her and she was talking about how they've gone through a lot of counseling. They've had all these, you know, really hard conversations. And she was saying how this week we just needed to have fun. Mm-hmm. And she was saying how sometimes in those hard conversations, when you're processing so much and everything feels so weighty, you forget to have fun.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, that's so good. I feel like not just if, you know, you're really struggling in your marriage and wondering if you're going to make it. But just in the day-to-day, sometimes it just, you know, like I was talking about the last 5 years of our life, where it just, everything feels like there's a lot of fires burning outside of, you know, it's like, don't burn your own house down. Yeah. Like it feels like there's just fires burning everywhere. And you're focusing so much on putting out those fires that you're not stoking the fires of your relationship.
Absolutely. Well, and I think there are certain ways that we handle it. And I have a marriage temperature check at the beginning of the book, but there are some ways that we handle these issues that tend to actually, like you're saying, Crystal, like stoke more of the fire. So you fight fire with fire, right? So say you're frustrated. Fighting fire with fire is like going at one another. You're arguing, you're talking about the problem over and over again. When you were dating, I think a lot of us avoided that. When we're dating, you're like, no, I don't want anything tumultuous. I don't want, and of course, you're more excited. You're feeling less responsibility, less pressure. I'm not trying to romanticize this idea of fun because I know how horrible it can feel to be, you know, and I've been there and I talk about this in chapter 2, but like crying on the floor of your bathroom. Like, I just want you to freaking pay attention to me. Like, I just want you to see me. I'm broken and you're totally fine watching me cry myself to sleep. Like, what is that? I can't live like this. So I see you in that. To the listeners, like, please know my heart. It's weighty and it's hard and it shouldn't always be that way. But we are also continuously growing, right? And so then if we're fighting fire with fire, we're not doing the things we did in dating where we're like, okay, I have grace here. I have more forgiveness here. Instead, scripture says that love does not keep record of wrongs. And we have this list of receipts of all the things our spouse has done. So when they come home and say they don't do the dishes, you're like, well, you didn't do the dishes and you forgot my birthday. Or, okay, you didn't do the dishes and remember 3 years ago when you looked at that girl on Instagram, or you didn't do the dishes and this. And then you have this massive list where we're not choosing forgiveness. And I think in those moments, we really have to take a step back and look at how much Jesus has forgiven us for and our brokenness and our mistakes, because it's really easy to look past all the things that we're doing and to not self-evaluate. And like you said, Crystal, like, is my husband coming home and I'm greeting him with a smile? No, a lot of the time we're like giving him a laundry basket or handing him a kid and saying, hey, figure this out, because you're tired, you're worn out. But they don't feel pursued or loved. They feel your resentment. They don't feel like, oh, my spouse is excited for me to come home. So then there's this tone that's immediately set that says we're roommates. We're not soulmates. We're just living together. We're just partners. And so you have this list of receipts, and then you're treating them with bitterness because you have receipts. So there's like resentment coming out. And then you're both fighting fire with fire. Well, you did this. Well, you did this. Well, you did this. Instead of, how can I choose forgiveness? To know Christ calls me to forgiveness 70 times, 7 times, and that's not an actual calculation. It's endlessly, right? Because the Holy Spirit has forgiven us. So just because we feel like they don't deserve it doesn't mean we don't go to the Lord and seek Him. And I think that's the ultimate thing. The gospel, marriage is meant to sanctify. Marriage is meant to strengthen. Marriage is meant to make us see the worst in ourselves. And because say everything is really, really, really simple all the time, how do we see the areas that we need to grow? How do we see the areas where we need to become more like Jesus? We see in, I believe it's 1 John 2:6, where it says, if you claim to live in Him, you must walk as Jesus did. So our flesh wants to be selfish. We want to be self-serving. We want you to make us happy. Make me happy. Make me happy. Fulfill all of my needs. Maybe somebody else out there can fulfill all of my needs. And then you live in this headspace. But that's not who Jesus was. Jesus was patient. He was long-suffering. He was kind. He sat next to Judas right before he betrayed him. And he didn't gossip about him. He didn't tell him all the things he was doing wrong. He continued loving him. And that is a huge calling. And so I think a lot of this takes humility, right? Like we can kind of going back, I know I'm tangent, but we go back to fighting fire with fire, or you gossip about it. Like you talk to friends, you tell somebody, hey, my house is burning down, but you're not actually doing anything about it. You're like, do you see that over there? Do you see it? It's burning down. And look at the person who started the fire. They're just a mess. They're a mess. And they're just continuing to sit there, but so are you. And there are other ways, but I think a lot of this is an unwillingness to humble ourselves and say, hey, where are the areas where I can step back and I can look in that big fat mirror at my struggles? Because the divorced women I talk to, they say, and men, the divorced men as well, when I got divorced, all I had was that mirror because I couldn't control anything my partner was doing anymore. I didn't even have access to them anymore. I couldn't change all the things about them. I only had myself to look at. And as I looked back at the last 10, 15 years, I saw all of the ways I could have been better. And so my challenge with Don't Burn Your Own House Down is to sit there, to sit in front of that mirror. And it's uncomfortable, but I absolutely guarantee it will shift the dynamic of your marriage because you're saying, hey, Lord, you do your work in me. I'm not going to spend as much time as I have been pointing my finger at my spouse. I'm going to take a seat. I'm going to take a step back and I'm going to focus on you and not hoping my spouse can make me happy, give me peace, do all the things that only you, Jesus, are meant to do. Because if you get divorced, that person is not going to do that anyways. So how do we decenter our spouse from fulfilling this piece of us that was never meant to be fulfilled and focus on the areas we can become more like Christ? Mm.
And you talk about how a lot of times we're looking to our spouse to fulfill the things that only God can. And when we make that shift, it really does it takes so much pressure off of them. Like, mm-hmm. I feel sometimes we don't know the kind of pressure that we're putting on them because we have a dysfunctional view of who they're supposed to be for us. I love one of the things you talk about in the book about every Sunday, Jesse taking your communion cup from you. It's such a small little thing, but I read that and I was like, I think it's so often the little things that we don't pay attention to or show gratitude for. And that's really the glue that can hold our marriage together. It was like the silliest thing, but we've had these ladybugs in our bathroom. I do not know where they were coming from.
I have been hearing about this in Tennessee.
In our bathroom. And they were just literally bugging me. Fully intended. And we had already cleaned them all out. And then it was like a few days later, there's like more in the bathroom. And I just mentioned something about, could you just get these ladybugs out of the bathroom? Mm-hmm. And then I left and I came back home and they were gone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's such a simple little thing, but I was like, that is a way that he's showing me love. Or like, mm-hmm. I was talking about, we've got a lot of leaves in our yard that need to be cleaned up. And then I left and came back home. The leaves were gone, you know? And I think sometimes we miss those things, but mm-hmm. it's like, I was like, what a gift that he heard that and took action on that. And I know there are some women who are listening right now who are going, but you don't understand. You don't know my husband. Mm-hmm. Like, I could change, you know, to the ends of the earth and he's not going to change. Mm-hmm. And so what do you say to that woman who she feels like there's nothing I can do? She just feels hopeless in her relationship and really stuck.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say I'm so sorry because I know how truly weighty it feels to wonder, like, is this how I'm going to spend the rest of my life? Is this, am I going to have to feel like I chose the wrong partner for the rest of my life? Am I going to have to feel completely alone for the rest of my life? It's weighty. And I'm so sorry if you're feeling that because it is, it feels like, gosh, but if only I could just feel seen, or if only he could hear me on this, or only if only she could see this in me and my desire here, everything could be better. In one of my favorite chapters, Make the Dang Coffee, I talk about what you're talking about, Crystal, with the ladybugs, the micro attractions. I relate it back to like Universal or Disney, where you have these big rides, but you ride those rides maybe once a day. You know, you ride that big ride once because the line is so long. But throughout the day, you have these trash cans that are decorated. The bathrooms have themes. You have, you know, the lines themselves are part of the experience. And those are the micro attractions of the relationship. A lot of the time, the grandiose, the birthdays, the Valentines, the vacations, they're such a small snippet of what a relationship actually consists of. It's those micro daily actions that make the biggest difference. And so one of the things my grandma told me, my late grandma told me, I had asked her about her marriage. They'd been married over 50 years. And I asked her, what was for you, like if you had to pinpoint one thing that made you happy, like in your relationship or made your relationship thrive or grow. And they were always, you know, bickering. They had disagreements. They were not perfect by any means. But she said, we made it a point to outserve one another. Mm-hmm. And it became a game to them. She was like, I would go and wash his car and I'd come in and he'd have done all the dishes and cleaned the kitchen. And so then I would go and do this and I would go and do this. And then it's a game of outserving one another. And I think of Romans where it says outserve one another and showing honor. And in our marriages, I think we lose that. We lose the micro attractions, the little things that matter of going to the grocery store and picking up something they really like just because, or texting them and saying, hey, I just want, you know, you look so hot this morning, you know, or you are so attractive to me, or putting on a cute little outfit for intimacy, and sex and pleasure matter to your relationship, right? So it's these little moments that show, hey, I see you, looking into their eyes when they walk in the door, giving a 6-second kiss a day is meant to strengthen your relationship. It shifts oxytocin in your brain, which is kind of like your joy hormone, and makes you closer. It's a bonding hormone. So when we do these things and when we're intentional about them, we find that that's what builds the relationship. It's the little bids for affection, the little moments where you show, hey, I'm considering you. I'm thinking of you. You matter to me. Now, when you have a spouse who will not serve, and you have a spouse who doesn't care to do that, and you have a spouse who will ignore you, I would say, again, we do not have control over this person. But if you were dating again, say you were single tomorrow and you started dating again, what version of yourself would you become? Would you take better care of your body? Would you be more adventurous? Would you get more control of your finances? Would you be more complimentary to the people in your life? And if you started dating, how would you treat them? It is so tough to get to that place when resentment is filled within our hearts. But if we take a step back and say, Lord, I'm going to have to do this all over again anyway. If I were to start fresh, how can I be the most exceptional version of myself? The person you've committed your life to deserves the most exceptional version of yourselves. Now, this doesn't dismiss their lack of care. I think accountability is great for a relationship. Having people in your life who can hear what's going on so that your spouse isn't kind of hidden from what's, you're the only one seeing how they behave and then they go and behave a different way somewhere else. You don't have to live like that. Community and fellowship are huge for the sake of accountability so that people can see into your lives and they can have a voice. But when you let go of the resentments and you start doing the work to outserve your spouse, I genuinely believe and have seen in my own life that they then receive that and they start reciprocating. Again, going first sucks, right? It can suck. It feels daunting. But I think the Holy Spirit knows your heart, knows your life, and your reward is maybe not even here on this earth, but it is in heaven. Jesus sees you. He sees your exhaustion in your marriage. He sees the weight that you're carrying every day. He sees your loneliness, and he wants to fulfill that within you. But sometimes our reward is simply, Lord, I'm honoring you with my life, and that needs to be enough.
Mm. Obedience. You know, yeah. It's like we made a covenant before God, mm-hmm. and you know, there are exceptions, abuse, all of those types of things. But so often I think it is that we're tired and life is hard and we let go of some of those things. And I think how becoming the most exceptional version of ourselves, that is not only a way that we can bless our family, our, you know, obviously our spouse, but also it's like honoring the Lord with our life. I think of like, we are his temple. That's something that I've been thinking about a lot and how we live our life, the way what we put in our body, the way that we dress, the way that we rest, you know, all of these types of things and play and, you know, things to be energized and have joy. Mm-hmm. And I think so often we are just making it through and surviving. We're forgetting about those beautiful things that maybe back when we were dating, you know, we had that energy and that spark. And so I love that. And I just appreciate this book is packed with so much practical wisdom, but also just so much deep encouragement. It really has challenged me. And I think everyone, no matter whether you feel like our marriage is great or whether you feel like you are barely hanging on or you're not even married yet because you're wanting to prep for that, I feel like that this would be a great book. Don't burn your own house down. Prioritizing your marriage, your spouse, and yourself for a deeper connection. Thank you so much for joining us today, Lindsay.
Thank you, Crystal. It was lovely.
Thank you for joining us today. For more great resources, please visit crystalpayne.com.